some parents think, well, I must be doing something wrong. My belief as a psychologist is, you know, kids who are strong-willed, they can only keep it together for so long. And so they are able to kind of navigate and maybe be great at school all day, but then come home and it's like they're kind of holding something back inside. And they feel safe. They feel safe at home. And so you are going to get sometimes the worst of the worst. Welcome to the Mama Shrink Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cynthia Hauver, licensed psychologist, certified coach, and Gen X mama of two amazing boys. My belief, you can't be an awesome mama unless you're taking care of yourself first. And that's exactly why I created Mama Shrink. You'll get my 20 plus years of experience combined with some very real life struggles. And together, we'll unpack the mental health, the physical health, even spiritual health to get you loving your mama life again. Listen, these kids of ours, they're only young once, and it goes by so fast, and you're never, ever gonna get this time back. We must learn to enjoy this wild ride of parenting. So if you're up for it, mama, let's do this. Hey, mamas, before we jump into today's episode, I just want to remind you that although I am a licensed psychologist, I'm not serving here as your psychologist. This podcast is not a substitute for direct mental health care. If you're struggling with a mental health issue of any kind, please reach out to a licensed professional. You can also contact the National Suicide Crisis Line by calling or texting 988. There's no shame in having a mental health issue, and it should always be taken seriously. Welcome, mamas. Thank you again for joining me. It means a lot to me. Glad to have you back. I am Dr. Cynthia, aka Mama Shrink. And today's show, I wanted to talk about how to parent a strong-willed child. And I think it's important because when I say strong-willed, I don't mean that the child is bad or that they're a bad kid or there's something wrong more severely going on with the child. It's just a type of temperament. And if you have a strong-willed child, I think you'll know it. You'll feel it. You've dealt with it. And it's one of the things that I've dealt with personally, but also professionally as well. A lot of parents come in to see me trying to figure out strategies and ways of coping with a strong-willed child. So my little guy, Lucas, he's 5 years old now. From the time he was born, was a strong-willed child. He, you know, came to us at 2 weeks old and the cutest little thing ever. And when his temperament is in a good place, he's always so loving and kind and sweet and happy. But there's this other part of his temperament that gets so angry and defiant. I wonder sometimes, as Lucas was a baby, he had colic, and his colic lasted way longer than other children who have colic usually last for. Lucas had colic probably for about a year, and it was very difficult. Thank God for my husband, who is much more calm and patient than I am, for being able on those very, very long nights of going in and, you know, soothing him and sitting with him as basically, you know, as anyone has dealt with colic will know, just screaming and inconsolable. And we, you know, sought out experts and tried to change his formula and do all sorts of natural remedies, and nothing would work. And, you know, it's one day the switch just flipped and he grew out of it. But as Lucas got to be a little older, he's always had more of a feisty temperament. So whereas my son Thomas, if I tell him to go into timeout, he will just cry because he got in trouble. Whereas with my son, Lucas, I'll tell him to go into timeout and he will just say, no, I'm not going. And, you know, I'll be perfectly honest. And as I said before, I'm pretty honest in sharing things. I mean, there's times where we literally have to lift him and put him into the bathroom and hold the door shut and have him go into timeout because he physically will not go there. Now, we've been very consistent in our parenting. So now that he's five, thank goodness, because he's a strong little boy, we've got him to the point where he knows, you know, go to timeout. And he will now, he's just starting actually in the last few months to do that. So it's a challenge. And I feel for parents because, you know, it can happen at a moment's notice. You know, a strong-willed child, something inside them that upsets them or goes off in them. It could be, you know, in the middle of everything's great and you're having a great dinner and then bam, something sets them off, or everything seems fine and they're getting along with their sibling and then boom, you know, it's like a complete meltdown change. One of the things I do, and maybe I'll talk about this in another episode, is we have really discovered with Lucas, and I think it's important for parents to look at this, is, you know, when Lucas has red or blue dye, I always wondered if that was a myth or not, but when he has red or blue dye, he really does get very, very irritable and angry about an hour or 2 hours after the fact. So we've really sat with him and told him that he cannot have any candy or anything that has red, blue, or purple, because red and blue make purple. I've discovered purple is the worst. So I want to share that with all of you, because there are some times where something in their diet can be making this even worse. So if you're dealing with a strong-willed child and their diet also has something in it that's setting them off, and sometimes it can also be certain medications. So I've heard from parents that will say giving their child Benadryl, for some parents, you know, that will make their child go to sleep. But sometimes it can have the opposite effect and make the child very wired. And there's other things too to consider, like Lucas has allergy-induced asthma. And so it's getting better as he's getting older. But a lot of times we would have to give him nebulizer treatments several times a day. And those are steroids, and the steroids would set them off. So, you know, it's good to look in at your child's whole day, things that are going on. Are there certain things that are little tweaks you can make to have this be less intensive? But I think it's important for parents to know that it's not always something about you. You know, we have two children by two completely biologically different parents being raised in the same environment. And I can say that pretty confidently because they're very close in age. So, you know, not a lot in our lives is different between Thomas being seven and Lucas being five. And we try to parent them both exactly the same. And so biologically, you know, they're coming to us very different. And so I can see the difference, and I could see it from day one. And that's okay, you know, and you have to just be a little bit more consistent and be kind to yourselves, moms. Like, having a strong-willed child is very challenging. And my heart goes out to any single moms out there who are doing this on their own, because it is a challenge. And it's hard to regroup and still feel love. And, you know, because a lot of times these kids can be so loving and kind when they're not in that state. So I think my message, I hope that you get from this and the tips that I'm going to go over with you today, I hope that you realize it is something you can change. It may take a long time. I think we have been consistent with our parenting for 5 years, and we are now finally in a routine where, you know, we're really starting to see Lucas when he starts to get upset, and we can kind of see the change coming on.
to keep implementing these techniques, and it's less, you know, the outbursts are less, the time that it takes him to recover is less. And it's been a long haul. It's been a really long haul. And it's also hard sometimes because everywhere Lucas goes, people tell us he's the best little boy. So it is preschool. You know, we get told all the time, no, Lucas never does anything wrong. He's never acted out for anybody but us. And, you know, I think some parents think, well, I must be doing something wrong. My belief as a psychologist is, you know, kids who are strong-willed, they can only keep it together for so long. And so they are able to kind of navigate and maybe be great at school all day, but then come home and it's like they're kind of holding something back inside, and they feel safe. They feel safe at home. And so you are going to get sometimes the worst of the worst. And that's not always pleasant for us as parents. But try not to think, you know, it's got to be something I'm doing wrong. Now, when I go over some of this stuff today on how to parent a strong-willed child, you may find you are doing something wrong. And that's okay. So give yourself a break. Like, we're learning here. The purpose of this podcast is to help you mamas without judgment, without saying, oh gosh, you've been doing this whole parenting thing wrong. I believe you just start from scratch and you just implement things that may work for you. And I hope that's what you get out of it, because I do understand that sometimes it can feel personal. It can feel challenging. It can feel like you just want to cry. And sometimes you need to go cry. And you'll hear me say a lot in the show that, you know, go to your bathroom, make your bathroom comfortable, because as a parent, as a mama, you're going to be crying a lot in there. And that's okay. We got to let our feelings out. So I just want to start by making sure as I go through some of this stuff, if something rings true to you and you're thinking, oh gosh, I'm doing this wrong, that's okay. It's okay. That's why I created this. This is what I want to do, is to help moms feel more empowered with themselves and with their parenting. So I wanted to throw that out, and I do understand that personally and professionally. So it is a hard, hard thing to do. And I'll talk a little bit too towards the end. How do you balance when you have a child who's very strong-willed, when you have another child who may be very easy to parent? Because sometimes we get so focused on parenting the strong-willed child, we don't want to then almost make it seem like we're giving more attention to the strong-willed child. So then the child that's easier to parent feels they're not getting attention, and maybe they need to act out to have the same attention. So that's kind of a fine balance, because a lot of parents that have two or more children will often come in and there's usually one child who's a little bit easier and one that's more difficult. So I want to throw that out there as well. Okay, so before I get into the parenting component and some tips on how to parent a strong-willed child, I wanted to start by just going over the three basic types of parenting. And again, no judgment, but just recognizing if you see yourself falling into one of the categories that might not be the best style of parenting. And it's not saying that if you have been doing it, you're a horrible parent. But there is a lot of research showing that there is one parenting style that is the best out of all three. So there's three different types of parenting styles. The first is permissive. The second is authoritative. And the third, which is the one we want to kind of shoot for, is authoritarian. So I'm just going to explain those in pretty simplistic terms. I'm not going to get too psychological. But when you look at permissive parenting, this is the type of parenting where you're letting your child make the rules and you tend not to follow through with punishments. So you may give your child too much freedom, not setting a lot of limits. Sometimes it's actually having your children have too much choice in the decision making that's going on in the family. tend to back down because you don't want your child to feel bad or have their feelings hurt. And hey, haven't we all been there? I mean, one of the worst parts, I think, of being a mom is when I have to say no and I see this incredible sadness in my children's face and it just breaks my heart. So sometimes parents get into that place of wanting their children to like them so much and to always make them happy that they're not saying no. They're just letting them have everything. You may give in because the short-term peace feels better than the long-term gain. And giving them way too much say in how things are running in the household. For example, I'll give you a little example of something that happened the other day. Lucas was doing something and Thomas said, "No, you're not allowed to do that. You have to go over into the living room and sit down." And immediately I said to Thomas, "Thomas, you're not the parent. You're his brother. That's for mommy and daddy to do." So that's just a simple example of not, you know, if I hadn't said anything to Thomas and just let him do that, that's engaging more in permissive parenting. Or I've had clients come in and tell me that they couldn't buy a certain house that both of the parents really wanted to buy because the child didn't like it. And, you know, it's like, yes, you want your child to be happy, but there's some bigger decisions in life where we have to be the parent and they're the child. So you don't want your child being on the same level of making decisions as you are. And it can also just be spoiling your child, giving them too much, not having any limits, kind of a way over the top, free spirited type of parenting. And what happens when this child grows up, if you're engaging in permissive parenting, is they become a child who's very spoiled. They have a very hard time functioning in the world. So they don't understand when they go out into the world why other people are setting limits for them. They have difficulty adjusting to college, to being at work with other people where they have to do things that they don't want to do. Sometimes their relationships can be very difficult for them, even interpersonal relationships with a partner, because they expect that everything's always going to be on their terms. Worst case scenario, they can end up being a little narcissistic and thinking the world revolves around them. And sometimes they have a hard time leaving home because they want to stay in that safe environment of knowing that things are always going to be the way they want them and everything's just going to be easy and work out for them. So it's really important to not have your child have too much say in the relationship. And that's a hard one because, you know, as parents, we want to love our kids, but sometimes they're not going to like us. And I always tell moms, we're doing a good job if our kids don't like us sometimes, you know, not all the time, but our kids aren't supposed to like us at times. Like, that's our job as a mom, is we have to do the hard stuff. And it sucks. You know, I was just telling my husband the other day, I said, you know, sometimes it really sucks being the mom instead of the aunt, because my best friend, Stephanie, you know, my kids, you know, look at her as their aunt and they call her Aunt Steffi. And I said, you know, Aunt Steffi comes and she's so fun and everything's, you know, so much fun with her. And then I've got to be the one that has to set all the rules. And, you know, it does, it kind of hurts a little bit, but then I realize, well, I'm the mom, you know, this is the job of being the mom instead of the aunt. So we'll move on to the authoritative style of parenting, and then I'll go and talk about what's the best kind of parenting. So authoritative is a very rigid and strict type of parenting. So this is when kids are, you know, you do as I say, you have absolutely no say. It's very rigid. Sometimes it involves physical punishment. It involves having your child fear you instead of respect you. And it really doesn't work. And I know a lot of us probably have grown up more with an authoritative style of parenting. because, you know, in the old days, that was how people parented. It was very rigid and strict, and a child didn't have a voice, and it was, you know, it's my way or the highway. If you don't do that, I'm, you know, you're going to get a kick in the butt, you know, whatever it was. And the child feels like they have no voice. And it really can be a very angry, shutting down type of household. And this really does affect kids. And I think we went from like old school authoritative parenting. And then for a while, I think we switched too much over into the permissive parenting, because a lot of people grew up with that authoritative parenting and they didn't want that for their kids. So they went the complete opposite direction. So we want to get in the middle, which is what I'm going to talk about in a second. But, you know, people, I know a lot of people will believe, you know, no, sometimes you have to hit your kid. That's the only way they're going to listen. I come from the philosophy that it's not, but, you know, we won't get into that whole thing. But you really don't want your child to fear you. You want your child to respect you. And kids who fear their parents don't really respect their parents. They fear them. They don't want to talk to them. They close off from them. They are literally not going to share things with you. And as they become adolescents, you don't want that, because adolescents, I work with them. They're doing a lot of stuff that you want to know about. So you want to be able to set the family dynamic that, yes, there are rules, but you can also still talk to me and you're not going to get hit for it. Or you're going to fear me so much that you will never open up and have anything that you're going to feel comfortable sharing with me. And what happens to a child that grows up with a very authoritative household is they grow up feeling angry and resentful. They often feel shut down. They have a difficult time sometimes getting along with others. They can sometimes become bullies because they're acting out that rigid, mean, it's my way or the highway way at school and with their peers. They have a hard time having compassion for others. So they tend to be less compassionate because no one's really been compassionate with them or listened to their fears or what they're feeling. And when they get into relationships as adults, a lot of times they repeat the same patterns and they're filled with anger and tension and unhappiness. And, you know, they kind of want to have everything rigid in their way and almost like that very militant, you know, this is, you know, it's like you're parenting as a dictator, and it really does not serve your children. Let's go to the best type of parenting, which is authoritarian. And so with authoritarian parenting, it's basically just really fair and compassionate. So you're very fair but firm in making sure that your child follows the rules. You listen to what they have to say, and you let them know that you'll listen to them and hear what they have to say. Their voice is being heard. But it doesn't mean that you're always going to agree with it. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be consequences for bad decisions, but you're still letting them have their voice. So an example just happened last night. Lucas was melting down about something, and he kept saying, even though he had already told us this, he kept saying, "No one's hearing me. No one is hearing me right now. You need to listen." We already knew he was going to tell us the same thing he's been telling us, but we both stopped and said, "Okay, tell us again what you want to say." And he did. And I noticed, just because he had that space again to say what he needed to say, and we've said, "Okay, we hear what you're saying, but you're still going into timeout." So that's kind of authoritarian parenting. It's saying, "I hear you, but what you did still is not okay, or you still weren't following the rules." And that's really important, because kids need to feel heard. Now, their voice doesn't have to be the be-all, end-all in the family, but they want to feel that they're heard. And even if you don't agree with them or you give them consequences for bad behavior, you're still listening. And another important piece of authoritarian parenting is the punishment fits the crime, which is really important in parenting. I often tell parents, you know, don't go for something really extreme if it's something minor. You know, you want your punishment to fit the crime. And you stick to that punishment even when it's difficult to do so. So that's where it gets murky when you cross over into permissive parenting. So permissive parenting would be telling your child, okay, what you're getting your iPad removed for a week because you did this and it's something they did and it was really bad. And you say the iPad's going for a week. Permissive parenting would be day two or three. They're starting to be really good. They're acting really good. And they're saying, Mom, can I please have my iPad back, please? And you're like, okay, yeah, you've been good. No, 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 no. So authoritarian parenting is, I know, honey, that you've been being good for the last couple of days, and I really appreciate that, but you're still not getting your iPad back until the time that I said. So you're still not getting it back for a week. I appreciate that you're being a great little boy right now, but you're not getting it back until when I said. That's the difference. So, you know, and authoritative would be, you know, you're getting your iPad removed for a year and I'm not even talking to you to shut your mouth. So just so you can start to get examples of the subtleties that can happen and how we could fall into some of these things pretty easily. And you want to, you know, authoritarian parents, they tend to remain more calm. There's not a lot of yelling or screaming and getting their point across. They're firm and oftentimes have to repeat themselves. They give their child a voice in the family, but they don't let them make the decisions. So you may say, oh, well, what would you think about us doing this today? And, you know, they may say something, but it's not always, okay, well, we'll do whatever you want. It's, well, you know what? Mommy and daddy really want to do this. Let's try it. So they get a voice, but they don't make the final decision. They're not a decision maker in the family, you know, and kids really, you know, have to have their voice, but they shouldn't be making hard decisions, especially when they're younger. And you try to remain calm and you always stick to your original plan. You don't go back on your word. And that can be anything, whether it's for a punishment or it's something that you promised your child to do. So you kind of set that up for, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And they realize that. They start to know that. Like one of the most famous things that seems to come out of my mouth all the time anymore is, you know, mommy's going to follow through on this, right? So I don't know why we're arguing this. Like what I said is going to stick. And that could be for a good thing or a bad thing. So you really want to do this with your child. You want to hear them, nurture them, but also set boundaries that meet where, you know, the punishment fits the crime. And so it's a delicate balance. And these types of children, you know, they grow up with really good self-esteem. They see the world from both points of view. So even though they may say, I don't agree with that person, they tend to be people who can still see their side of the story. They're open to feedback from others. They usually have very healthy relationships in their life with intimate partners and friends. And they're likable. They're people who are more, you know, open to going with the flow, but also having their voice. So they become more assertive and confident. And I think this is what most of us, you know, want for our children. So if you recognize yourself in any of these types of parenting, it's okay if you're not being the authoritarian parent, but it's something to aspire to because it really does make a difference. And this isn't just my, you know, perspective on it. It's been researched for years, and we know this type of parenting is the best type of parenting. And some people will refer to authoritarian parenting as fair parenting, which is a good word for it. You know, it's fair. It's being not neutral. It's fair. It's everything just feels good and fair. And the expectations are set. Kids know what to expect in the family. They know that their voice matters, but they also know that there's limits and boundaries. So now that we've talked about the three types of parenting, because this does play a role in how you're parenting a strong-willed child, because if you have a strong-willed child, it may seem very natural to be more authoritative and just set the rules down, and that's the way it is. And it also may seem easier to be permissive, where you're just like, I can't do this, whatever, I give up. So I wanted to really explain trying to go into authoritarian parenting and make sure that's where you're kind of at as a baseline is really important, as I'm going to talk about ways to parent a strong-willed child. So I really just want to simplify this as much as I can for the purposes of a podcast. So obviously, this is something that's very complex. There's tons of books written about it. There's courses on it. People come into therapy for it for a very long time. So I'm simplifying something that I know is a very complicated topic. But I want to just give you some basic skills for trying to implement ways to parent your strong-willed child. So I kind of break it down into the big five of parenting. So my big five of parenting, the strong-willed child, are be nice, set your expectations up in advance, set firm limits, be consistent, and forgive. So let's just talk a little bit about this, break it down a little bit. So when I say be nice, I mean you as the parent, be nice. So, which is very hard when you're dealing with a strong-willed child. So somehow trying to find a way to keep your cool. If you find yourself raising your voice, getting angry, and yes, I have done this too, you know, you need to step away until you cool off a little bit. Raising your voice or using physical punishment, even more so with a strong-willed child, but actually any child, only escalates the situation. And it actually makes the child become more upset and more angry. So you really want to remain calm and cool. You don't want to engage in raising your voice. You don't want to go for the battle of the wills. You don't want to use physical punishment. And you also want to know that, yes, that might be your first inclination, but just take a step back and try and keep your cool. And you may have to take a little adult time out and say, okay, I'm going to deal with you, but I need 10 minutes or I need a minute to go regroup myself because I don't want to yell at you right now. And you can, you know, kind of walk away and just take some deep breaths and know, okay, I really want to scream. I may want to throw something. I may even want to do something worse, but I've got to keep my cool. You then, number two, set your expectations up in advance. So your child needs to know specifically ahead of time, before they are acting out, what the rules are and what the consequences will be for breaking that rule. This is super important because I hear so much from parents that I'll say, well, what is your child? What's the rule in the house? If they don't do this, what happens? And a lot of times parents will tell me, well, we don't have a specific rule. And I'll start with them by saying, okay, well, I want you to start setting up very specific rules so the child knows what's going to happen if they don't follow what you told them to do, or they start breaking out in a temper tantrum or screaming at you. You want to have rules in place ahead of time, and you want to convey that to your child. And you can do this, you know, from children who are, you know, I always say, take these things I'm giving you for a child who's age 3 or older. So with a 3-year-old, you can explain in 3-year-old terms, when you do this, you are going into timeout. And when you go into timeout, this is how long it's going to be. And it's not going to change. And every time you do this, this is what's going to happen. For another child, it may be when you act this way or do this thing, your, you know, iPad is being taken away for this long. It could be you will not go out this weekend with your friends, you know, but they have to know in advance if I do that, that's the consequence. And then you have to stick to that consequence. So always let your child know, look, when you behave this way, this is what's going to happen. And do this in a time when they're not engaging in the tantrum or acting out. You want to do this in a calm time. And you could say, you know, look, after what happened yesterday, I just want you to know that I have some rules now, and this is what's going to happen when you do this. And I'm not going to back down on that. You want to make sure that your child understands that. So you can even ask them, so do you get what I'm saying? Can you tell me what mommy just said? And have them repeat it back to you. Then number three is set firm limits. And this is where I think we get into a lot of problems as parents, where you want no to equal no. No cannot equal maybe, or sometimes, or, well, I say no, but then sometimes I give in. You know, you, when you say no, you want your child to know that no means no. And you are not going to give in to it. You know, and I know this is super hard, you know, but it does work. It may take a few times. I mean, I don't know how strong-willed your child may be. Some children need you to repeat things 15, 20 times before they get it. Some only need a couple. But, you know, this can be anything, like when you're at the grocery store and your child asks for something and you say no, and they start throwing a temper tantrum, you need to leave the store. I know it sucks, right? Like, who wants to like leave the store? You've got to get stuff. You may have to get groceries, but they need to know as soon as they start acting out, you are not messing around, and you don't want to be getting in a fight in the middle of the aisle in the store, or trying to negotiate, or, you know, again, going back to the parenting styles, or giving them what they want just so you could get your groceries done. I mean, I know that's the easier thing. But once you do this, game over. They have learned. Kids are smart. They will do it again. So no has to mean no, and it can't mean maybe or sometimes. You need to be consistent, which is number four. You can't back down on the rules and the consequences that you put into place. Like, once you do that, you have to go all the way back to the drawing board. So when you say no, they know you mean no. The consequence is going to be this, and that's the way it is. And at first, it is going to feel so hard. It's going to be hard. But once you start doing this and they start to really recognize, like, when mommy says no, that means no, it'll eventually start getting better. It will. And it can feel extremely difficult in the moment, but you have to be consistent. And, you know, even with doing timeouts, I mean, if your child is throwing a tantrum in the store, acting out, you know, you could say, okay, I'm going to bring you to the bathroom and we're going to sit there and we're going to try and calm down. You're going to breathe a little bit and we're going to see if you can pull this back together. But if they can't, then you leave. You know, you could put another little process in place, but you don't just keep letting them get away with it. And then the fifth thing is forgiveness. And this is a hard one because, gosh, we're human, right, moms? I mean, our feelings get hurt. I don't like being screamed at or yelled at or feeling depleted or overwhelmed. So this is a very, very hard one to be able to say, okay, I've got to now, when this is over, love them and forgive them. Not hold on to the grudge. Let them know when this behavior stops, that you are able to love them, you show them love, you try not to hold on to it, and you focus on the behavior. So you focus on that behavior was not okay with me, because you don't want the child to feel like they're a bad kid. You want them to know their behavior isn't okay. And I think that's part of helping you with forgiveness, is to realize, okay, something is more intense with my child. But when this is over, I have to be able to forgive them. I want them to still feel loved, because I know that there's a beautiful little child in there that is worthy of feeling loved, and let it go. So I want to just end today with giving you a couple of examples of an effective timeout And I also just want to talk a little bit about some fast action parenting tips. So let's start with 5 fast action parenting tips that I like to give to moms. So number 1 is give only 2 choices to your child. This is really, really important because kids respond well when they have only 2 choices. And it also allows them to feel like they have some control. So an example of this would be saying something like, you can stop bouncing the ball against the window, or I can take it away. Which would you like to do? Or you could say, I need you to pick up your toys, or I'm going to have to take them away. What would you like to do? So you give them very simple direction and let them make the choice. And you're still probably going to get them to make the right choice, but they still feel like they have a choice. So that's super important, is give only 2 choices. So you don't want to give 3 or 4 or 5 or keep going on and on. You want to break it down very simple with 2 choices. Number 2 is use a timer for kids who need time limit setting. So even more so, this happens a lot when kids are younger. You want to start letting them know they have a schedule and a routine. And this is important for kids, even though they may fight you on it. Kids really do need routine. So maybe it's setting a timer for brushing their teeth, or getting ready for bed, or getting ready for school in the morning. So you let them know, or you could do it with a clock. But I really recommend using, you know, an old-fashioned clock that has the actual hands on it. So you can say, okay, when the big hand gets on the 3, you need to be ready to go out the door. Or when the big hand gets on the 5, you need to be done brushing your teeth. Or you have 5 more minutes and show them on the clock until you have to turn off that show. So a lot of using time for kids is super important, because when they're little, they don't understand what 5 minutes really is, you know, and they may say to you, which I've had happen, that hasn't been 5 minutes. It has not. That's only been 2 minutes. So you really want to use a timer or a clock to get them in the habit of knowing, okay, there's boundaries. I'm letting you do this, but this is when this needs to be done by. Number 3 is use effective consequences. So what I mean by this is something immediate, something that they value, something where the punishment fits the crime. You know, so a lot of times, you know, for teenagers, if they've done something and their parent, you know, is looking for a way to set a punishment, I'll say, well, take their cell phone away for the night. And I'm always astonished sometimes by parents that are like, well, I can't do that. They need it for this or they need it for that. And it's like, that's exactly why you take that. You take the thing that they need or want the most, because you're upping the ante. You know, they know you mean business. So with a little kid, you know, I think it's hard managing devices. But if it is, you know, they're playing on a Kindle or an iPad, you say, okay, it's going for a day, and you take it. So you want to give them something that really does fit the crime. So you sometimes, you know, little things, you're not going to want to take it for a week. So you have to think, okay, how big of an issue is this and what would meet the crime? Sometimes it's taking away the show they want to watch. Or maybe, you know, if it's something really serious, it's not being able to go somewhere. I mean, those are things that are going to match the crime. But again, you have to stick to it. Number 4, use timeout. And I'm going to go over 5 steps for using an effective timeout in just a second. But timeout really is so effective. And really, you can use timeout even with teenagers. You know, it might look a little different. Like, go to your room and take 10 minutes. Go take a break. Go take some breaths. But when I go over how to use timeout, there's some things you have to have in place to make sure you're doing it correctly. And then you want to use positive motivation. So when they're doing good, tell them. So many times kids feel like we're only pointing out things that they do wrong. So when your kid is doing something good, point it out. If they got ready for school in the allotted time that you asked, tell them, wow, thanks, that was great. Thank you for doing that. Or if they brush their teeth and they get into bed, it's like, wow, thank you so much. What a, you know, good boy you are, a good girl you are for doing that. That meant so much to just have you do that. See how great that was? And kids like that. They want, just like we as adults want to be told when we do something right, not just when we do something wrong. And it may seem simple, like, well, of course they're supposed to do these things. But they're going to become easier if you give them positive motivation. You know, they're little beings and they respond the same way that we do. But they need to hear positive reinforcement too. It's very important. And I also throw in there, like, as parents, we need to model good behavior. That is so important. You know, kids do not learn by the old saying, do as I say, not as I do. Kids learn by, I'm going to do what I see you do. So you can't say one thing and do another. So set a good example. You know, don't expect your child to act kind and respectful to people if you're not acting kind and respectful to people. Don't ask your child to put their device down if you have your cell phone in your face. You can't do that. You have to set good examples. Don't expect them to say please and thank you if you're not saying please and thank you. And kids really do learn a lot by what they see and observe. And sometimes they're picking up on things that you won't even know until one day it pops out of their mouth or they say something to you. So they're very good observers. So be a good role model. You can't expect your child to do something if you're not doing it yourself. So even when I find myself getting angry, I'll even say, well, mommy needs to go take a timeout. And I will. I'll go take a few breaths and regroup. And or if I do something as a mom, and then I look and I think, wow, that really wasn't okay. Or some type of thing I'm using to parent my kids. I will go back and tell my kids, you know what? I'm really sorry. Mommy didn't make a good choice there. That was not okay for me to say that. Or that really wasn't the best idea. I'm really sorry that I said that. Or if I think about it and it's something that hurts their feelings, I will say I'm sorry. And that teaches them that it's okay to say you're sorry. Teaches your child it's okay to make mistakes because you're human. And we want them to be able to feel like there, it's okay to screw up sometimes. So now I'm just going to close today with 5 steps for an effective timeout. Timeout is super effective as long as you use it correctly. And a lot of times I see parents not using it correctly. So I just want to give you some tips on how to use timeout. So first, you want to introduce your child to what timeout is. So you could say something like, you know, I've been thinking about ways to manage your behavior when you're being bad. So when you act out, you're going to go sit over here and I'm going to tell you how many minutes and set a timer. And you have to stay there until until you calm down or I tell you it's okay to get up. You want to tell them exactly what it is, that it's going to happen, and it's something that you're implementing. And even if you've already been implementing timeout and maybe you find that you're not doing it in the best way, it's okay to say, you know, I've been using this for you, but mommy's going to change some things and this is how we're going to do it. So it's okay to change your mind. So you introduce your child to what exactly timeout is. And then it needs to remain brief. I mean, a timeout can't be an hour. A timeout has to be brief. You know, it's really meant to kind of calm us down and regroup. So the standard rule is 1 minute per age. So, and you really don't want to start doing this until your child's about, because before age three, they're not really able to understand the concept of timeout, maybe a little bit, but usually around age three is the best time to start it. And so for a three-year-old, they would, you know, do timeout for 3 minutes. For a five-year-old, it would be 5 minutes. For a 10-year-old, it would be 10 minutes. But you can vary that. I mean, some parents say, you know, I do 5 minutes straight across the board if I have more than one child. Sometimes parents say, you know, I only feel like they need 2 or 3 minutes to calm down. You can kind of figure that out, but it has to be brief and it has to be consistent. The other big thing that I see parents sometimes not doing correctly is timeout has to be somewhere where there are no distractions. You cannot put a child in timeout where they have toys to play with, or they can see the TV, or they're in the middle of the kitchen when everyone's still there. Like, it has to be away from any stimulation or any distractions. Now, I know, you know, people have seen pictures of the timeout chair and you're facing the corner. I don't necessarily like that myself. I think trying to make it somewhere where it's quiet, but, you know, not feel like you're, you know, I don't know. It just feels wrong to have your child sitting in a corner with their head down. But, you know, maybe it's putting them in the living room if everyone else is in the kitchen and they know you have to stay there. Or, you know, maybe it's putting them in, you know, the bathroom or somewhere where there's no distraction. They can't hear what else is going on. Like, they really have to feel like they're being removed from everything else to, number one, regroup. And also, it's not really a punishment if you're, you know, able to play with your toys. And then kids are going to be like, all right, great, I get to go into timeout. You want to set a simple kitchen timer or, again, a clock with, like, old fashioned with hands on it, and let your child know that if they come out before the timer goes off, that they have to start all over again. So if you tell your child, okay, you have to go into timeout, 5 minutes, you know, you let them know when the hand gets on this or when the timer goes off, then they're allowed to come out. But if they try to get out before that time, you have to say, okay, we have to start all over again. So it's really important to do that because they realize, oh, okay, so if I try and break this, then I'm going to have to sit here twice as long. And at first, again, it may be really, really difficult, but you have to stick with it. And if the behavior is continuing, so say you have a three-year-old and you put them in timeout for 3 minutes and they're still screaming at the end of the 3 minutes, then you would say, okay, you haven't calmed down, you have another 3 minutes. So very simply repeating, okay, you know, you didn't follow calming down, you didn't, you know, listen, you're still doing the same thing, it's going to be another 3 minutes. And you might have to repeat that a couple times. So it gets a little tricky because you don't want to have to be doing it for an hour. But if you teach them, you know, breathing and soothing and other forms of letting a child decompress, there's some things that will start to click into place for them where they realize this. And you really want to be consistent. You want to do the same thing over and over again. And if your child refuses to go in timeout, which I have had this experience many of a time with Lucas, and it's hard, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's hard. And sometimes I thought, God, is this like bordering on cruel? Because he will not go into timeout. Like, there was a time where he would not go into time, and up until recently, actually. And so we actually would pick him up and put him in the bathroom and hold the door shut. And he would have to stay in there and time out. And we would have to literally hold the door shut and sit on the outside of the door and tell him, okay, you have this many minutes and you need to calm down and you're not coming out until you stop screaming. And it's been some, you know, long, brutal times. But I tell you what, it's working. It's absolutely working. And sometimes it's been heartbreaking, but it works. So yeah, I hope that you aren't in that situation, because it has not been pretty for me. I've had at times a towel rack or two ripped off my wall because, you know, just still being angry. But I still make him stay in there and hold the door shut. And he's realized, like, yeah, that is exactly what's going to happen. So that is something that I hope you don't have to deal with. But, you know, it is important. You don't just say, well, I can't get them to go on timeout, forget it. You know, sometimes kids are a little more defiant and you have to up the ante a little bit. And again, you can check in with them. You know, you can say, okay, have you calmed down? All right, you can come out now. Now, I'm not saying like turn the light off or anything like that. You keep the light on. But we use the bathroom because there's no distraction in there. And really, it's a confined space. And it seems to work as somewhere where there's nothing that really is going to entertain him to get him to calm down. And sometimes, you know, I can hear him in there like running the water. But, you know, if running the water in the sink helps him calm down, that's okay. And then usually one of the things about timeout is, you know, after the whole thing's over, sometimes explaining it to your kids, you know, like, see, this is what's going to happen when you act this way. It doesn't have to be really long, and you don't want things to be long with kids. You want to keep it short and sweet, but you explain, like, I don't like having to do this either, but when you act this way, this is what's going to happen. And another final parenting thing that we've been using lately, that as Lucas has gotten older, so more around, you know, when he first turned 5, is walking away when he starts to get angry so it doesn't escalate. So almost just saying, you know what, we're not going to listen to this, and we walk into another room. And for some reason, that really seems to get him to listen. I think he doesn't like it when we walk away and say we're not engaging. And then, you know, Thomas, my husband, and I will just continue doing what we're doing. And he realizes, like, the whole house isn't going to stop because you're acting like this, and we're just going to go have fun, and you can stay and act like this. So as he's gotten a little older, I find that's also an effective parenting strategy. And if he follows us around and tries to engage us, we just kind of put our hand up and, like, with the stop motion and say, nope, not until you calm down. And then if it continues, then we go to the timeout. It's just important to try and work on things that are consistent, that are non-violent, that aren't aggressive, and don't let the child just feel like they can get away with that behavior. And it will take time. You know, some kids, it's going to take you a little bit longer than others. And I wanted to end with, you know, I did say I was going to mention the fact that the other child who might not be doing those things. So in my house, Thomas is much more sensitive. And if I tell him to go to timeout, he'll cry before he even gets to the chair, and he'll sit there. And there's never been a time where he didn't just go to timeout. It's uncanny how different they are. But I always still will make sure that I say things to Thomas that also don't make Lucas feel bad about himself. So I'll say things like, you know, Thomas, I really appreciate you listening to me when you did that thing and you went right into timeout so easily. Or, you know, I'm really glad that you listen to mommy. So sometimes, you know, we all make mistakes, but I try not to compare him directly to his brother. But I do try to give him positive reinforcement for being good, because the last thing you want is your other child starting to copy the one that's misbehaving. And then you have two children doing that. You want to make sure that you're reinforcing their good behavior. And sometimes, you know, doing that away from the child, maybe that's being defiant, or even whether in the timeout, you could look at your other child and say, you know, I'm really happy that you listen to me and that we don't have to do this. So just little simple things like that, because you want the child who is behaving well to not start regressing and to have that backfire on you. So that is parenting the strong-willed child and some styles of parenting for you. I hope this helps. If you want to drop me a line or let me know what you think about this episode, I'd love hearing from you. My email is drcynthia@mamashrink.com. And until next week, take care, mamas.
Thank you so much for listening, mamas. I really value your time. And if you like this episode, please share it with a friend and leave a review because they always help. If you want to learn more about me, just head on over to my website at drcynthiah.com. And you can find me on the socials at dr.cynthiahover. Until next week, please keep on taking care of you because life really is too short not to be happy.